Item one, a single airplane's impact on this economy. Item two, being on the sell side of all that holiday buying. And item three, look, you gotta start saving for retirement, gang, I'm telling you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday today, I do believe the 17th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Look, I know there are days when we start with this corporate story or that, and you probably say, come on, Kai, it's one lousy company. How much of a difference can it really make? I mean, the American economy is a $19 trillion beast, right? Well, yes, right. But we bring you now the Boeing Company, which yesterday, as you know, announced it's going to stop making, for a while anyway, its fatally flawed 737 MAX. A problem, yes, for the company. For its suppliers, too, about which more in a minute. But also, quite possibly, a problem for that $19 trillion beast, the American economy. Because as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, GDP growth could hit some Boeing-induced turbulence.
Before Boeing announced its production halt, its growing stockpile of undelivered 737 MAX planes had been boosting GDP, says Tim Quinlan, senior economist at Wells Fargo.
And so when they just simply stop making them, well, that inventory boost goes away. So without that boost, growth is now lower in the first quarter.
Quinlan estimates that the production halt could lower overall GDP growth by 0.5%. That's a small fraction of the overall U.S. economy, but Luke Tilley, chief economist at Wilmington Trust, says it's hard to imagine any other company having such an impact on growth.
Boeing is incredibly large. Obviously, it has a lot of employees, and the scale of the cutback here would be in the billions of dollars.
Boeing says the production halt is temporary and that it doesn't plan on laying off or furloughing the thousands of workers working on the 737 MAX assembly lines. Tom Derry, CEO of the Institute for Supply Management, says those workers have valuable skills Boeing doesn't want to lose in a competitive job market.
Hanging on to the skilled workforce that they have is a key strategic imperative for Boeing.
But if Boeing's production halt drags on, Tim Quinlan at Wells Fargo says furloughs and layoffs will be harder to avoid. That would immediately impact paychecks.
But eventually, it starts to pass through to the various suppliers for that factory and knock-on effects to other industries that service those workers.
He says if workers end up getting furloughed or laid off, everyone from parts manufacturers to the sandwich shop across the street would be contributing less to GDP. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
So along those lines, part of the reason Boeing's decision to suspend production of the 737 MAX is going to resonate through a very big chunk of this economy is that its supply chain reaches through a very big chunk of this economy. Marketplace's Jack Stewart is on that one.
The 737 MAX might be a Boeing plane, but the 35,000 parts that go into it come from an estimated 600 other firms, Boeing's suppliers.
A modern aircraft is not produced by a single company. A modern aircraft is really a global undertaking.
The engines, for example, are built by CFM International. That's a joint venture between General Electric and a French company. And each of them has its own hundreds of suppliers. Samuel Engel covers aviation at global consultancy ICF.
The fuselage may be built by Spirit in the U.S. The vertical pillars may be built in Japan or in China. The landing gear somewhere else.
Spirit Aerosystems gets 80% of its revenue from Boeing. As well as the fuselage, it builds parts for wings and engines. I contacted Spirit and a handful of other suppliers, large and small, as well as their trade groups, but none wanted to talk. Sean Pruchnicki at Ohio State University's Center for Aviation Studies says suppliers are busy figuring out how to slow or stop their own production.
There are significant hurdles to overcome when you stop a production line and then you try to restart it later.
Like inventory, where do you store the parts you can't use? How do you redeploy workers? And in a worst-case scenario, how do you even keep them on the payroll? And Boeing needs everyone ready to restart production, says Kevin Michaels at Aerodynamic Advisory.
If there is a small supplier in Kansas that maybe makes a few parts for the aircraft that is in financial distress, that can limit Boeing's ability to ramp up.
In a statement, Boeing says it'll work with suppliers to minimize disruption in an effort to keep its global supply chain intact. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
Here's another company grounding some of its planes. Nothing mechanical, though, strictly financial. Delivery giant FedEx reported abysmal quarterly profits after the bell today, down almost 40%, 40%. Global trade woes, higher costs, and a falling out with Amazon are the proximate causes. Share prices tumbled after hours. Modest gains, though, on the major indices during the regular session. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've been following a couple of three retailers this holiday season, small businesses, all of them in different parts of the country, to see how this, their most important couple of months of the year, are working out. We first heard from them back in November, just before Black Friday. We did our second round of check-ins this week. And first up, an e-commerce retailer not too far from Marketplace World headquarters here in L.A., who's coming up on a critical deadline.
I'm Patty Delgado. I'm the founder and owner of Hija de Tu Madre, and it is 9:06 a.m. in Los Angeles, California. I think from now up until the 18th are going to be our busiest days, just because we have to hit USPS cutoff times for shipping for these orders to arrive by Christmas. My two little brothers are coming to help me this week, and couldn't be happier. Our office still looks like a hot mess, but times 10, I think there's a lot of packages coming in and out every day. So we're trying to stay as organized as possible, but it's definitely not cute.
That was Patty Delgado. She does e-commerce here in Los Angeles. A couple of more check-ins in a couple of more minutes. We're still a pretty long ways from knowing exactly what's in that phase one trade deal the White House worked out with Beijing. But one of the key things President Trump kept saying as that deal was on again, then off again, then on again, was that his tariffs were hurting China more than they were hurting the United States, and that China has lost manufacturing jobs as a direct result of the trade war. 3 million of them. The actual figure, according to the Chinese government, is 3.8 million manufacturing jobs lost in urban parts of that country last year. Because of the tariffs, though, not entirely, says our China correspondent Jennifer Pack.
Li Xiangjun is in good spirits now, but a few days ago, he fainted at work on the factory floor. He manufactures screws for golf clubs for the U.S. market.
I work night shifts, but I'm too old for that. I have trouble falling asleep during the daytime, so my body couldn't handle it.
It's a far cry from his previous job at the United Shoe Factory, which manufactures U.S. brands like Red Wing Shoes. There, he worked the day shift. Then last year, he was laid off. His shoe factory moved to Cambodia.
I heard the company is offering a salary of 800 yuan a month in Cambodia, whereas our salaries are five times more.
His job is among the 3 million President Trump says were lost because of the U.S. tariffs. Now, Chinese government statistics do confirm a drop in manufacturing jobs, but employment in factories has been shrinking since 2015, long before the U.S. tariffs were in place. Worker Li Xiangjun.
We heard from factory managers that our company wanted to move out of China starting a few years ago.
The United Shoe Factory did not respond to our interview requests, but manufacturers say the rising cost of wages, raw materials, and rent are some of the top reasons they're looking to leave. The U.S. tariffs may have just sped up their exit plan. Li Guilian was also laid off by the United Shoe Factory, but she was not left empty-handed.
I received some compensation from the factory and also unemployment benefits.
But that's not enough for her to stop working, even though she is 51, a year older than the official retirement age for women. China has a pension system, but for years, employers could get away without paying into it. So even though Li Guilian worked for 18 years, her employer has not contributed enough for her to receive a pension, unless she pays in a few thousand dollars more. Money which, she tells me, she doesn't have. Even with a social welfare system, you still need big savings in China. At the start, we told you that worker Li Xiangjun had a fainting spell. Well, he stayed at the hospital for a few days.
The health insurance covered some of the costs, but I was too scared to stay longer and checked out early. I still had to pay 3,000 yuan.
That's about $400, 3 weeks of his current salary. Li Xiangjun says he's lucky to have found another job. Factory work has helped him put his children through college and build a new house. Plus,
my wife and I have helped our two sons pay for their weddings and put down payments on their first homes.
But at what cost? To give his family a better life, both he and his wife had to travel 700 miles from their village in central Hubei province to work in factories. They left their children behind when they were just a few years old. Today, his wife Zhang Yonghong may laugh when she calls their daughter, but she says they're not close.
Being apart from our children for two decades, our relationship has suffered, even though we called and wrote letters to them regularly.
Still, she has fond memories of working for the United Shoe Factory, which she says was a good employer. Not an easy thing to find now, says her husband Li Xiangjun, but he doesn't blame the factory for leaving China.
The boss wasn't making money.
The factory's closure, he says, is just business. In Zhongshan City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Let's do a little calendaring here, if we might. The House is set to impeach President Trump at some point in the next couple of days, as you know. Then probably second week of January or so, the Senate trial is going to start. And you know what happens then, right? Your public radio station, properly, is going to preempt us to cover that trial gavel to gavel. But that does not mean you have to miss us. One word, people. Podcast. Doesn't matter where you get it, just get it, because the economy does not wait, you know? Atlanta, Georgia is the next stop on today's brief tour of small business retailers heading into the last shopping week before Christmas. We're checking back in with somebody who's been running his store for 46 years. Last time we had him on, business had yet to really pick up. Now, though, he's getting there.
This is Gary Merriman. I'm the owner of the Fish Hawk in Atlanta, Georgia. The time is 9:48 a.m. on December 16th, 2019. Well, it should be very busy on the floor today. It has been most of last week. We had a couple of kind of slower days. Haven't really seen what we call desperate in the retail business yet. As you get closer to Christmas, you get people that have procrastinated so long that they get desperate, so they're in just grabbing stuff. We haven't seen that yet, but that's coming. We had a very good weekend. Online sales are starting to pick up pretty well.
That was Gary Merriman at the Fish Hawk, a fly fishing place down in Atlanta. Coming up.
It's not that hard. It's sometimes kind of stressful.
When your 30-minute drive to school means crossing the border. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 31 today, 0.1%, closed at 28,267. The NASDAQ found 9 points, also a 10%, 88.23. The S&P 500 ticked up a point. We'll call that basically flat, 31.92. You heard from Jack about the impact of Boeing's planned suspension of 737 MAX production on its suppliers. Here with some of those companies. Spirit AeroSystems down 2.8%. Hexcel also down 2.8%. Woodward Incorporated 2.1% to the offside. Arconic down 1%. United Technologies off 0.5%. Boeing, by the way, basically flat. The struggling retailer Bed Bath & Beyond is replacing some senior executives as it tries to turn itself around. chain's been struggling to stay relevant as I struggle with this sentence and moving more shoppers online. Shares jumped 11.2% today. Bond prices rose just a touch. Yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.87%. You're listening to Marketplace. Marketplace helps you answer questions you've always wondered about, and now that includes finding out more about how and why we do what we do every day. Become a Marketplace investor today, and you'll get exclusive access to a series of virtual AMAs featuring David Brancaccio, Molly Wood, and me, Kai Ryssdal. Don't miss out on our 2020 Ask Me Anything series. Contribute $60 or sign up to donate $5 a month at marketplace.org, and thanks. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We here at Marketplace spend a whole lot of time keeping track of financial news. And there is always, and I mean literally always, some article or piece of clickbait promising you the secrets of retirement. How to have $3 million in the bank by 65, no matter how much you make today, or some such. So with that in mind, give a listen to today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Janet Johnson, and I'm 63 years old. I run a small business in Raleigh, North Carolina. Nowadays, I read everything I can about retirement and finances, and I never did before because it was just too boring. But now I need to know this stuff, and I'm realizing I don't even know what I don't know. You know, as I've learned about things like under some conditions, you don't get Social Security if you have a state pension. And so I've got to learn about that, and I wonder, what else do I not know that I don't know, so I don't know to research it. So I would like just a class of, here's everything that you need to know. My husband will be 65 on his next birthday, so we're getting all these advertisements for dinners we can go to, and they'll teach us all about retirement. And I had a friend go to one of those, and then totally make bad decisions based on advice that they gave her. I have several people who I can ask financial questions, but they answer over my head in ways that I don't understand what they're saying. And they'll just tell me things like, be sure to be inflation averse. And I'm like, well, how? I don't, you know, I sort of know that that's important, but I don't know what you mean. Like, how do you be inflation averse? And then they'll tell me to do something that I don't know what it means. And so I figure, okay, then I go home and Google inflation averse and, you know, see what can I learn about what that means. I don't feel like I quite have it completely figured out yet, but I feel pretty good about the fact that I think we are to the point where we are, we'll be able to pay our bills and eat and get car repairs done, and we'll have health insurance. I figure I've got a couple years to actually understand it all. I'll just be super conservative until I do understand it. And now I'm trying to navigate Medicare, and I think, what did Ed McMahon used to say on those boring commercials when we were kids? I want to say, if you or someone you know is about to turn 65, and I would quit listening.
Janet Johnson there. She is in Raleigh, North Carolina. We cannot do this series without your help, everybody. So take a second, would you, and let us know what is happening in your economy. There's a place you can do it at marketplace.org. There are stories told along the southern border of immigration and human rights abuses, of hardship and of risk-taking. Nothing really positive at all. Here, though, is a moment of opportunity driven, admittedly, by financial necessity. The high and rising cost of college is real, and it's everywhere. But as Max Rivlin-Nadler of KPBS reports, some Southern California students have found another option.
Rebecca Yanez and Arturo Vasquez carpool together most days at 7 a.m. to cross the border to go to college. These American students both went to high school in San Diego and are business majors. As they approach the U.S. border with Mexico, there's barely a line. Yanez usually makes the trip from San Diego to her school in Mexico in half an hour.
It's not that hard. It's sometimes kind of stressful just because of the problems at the border. But besides that, it's been okay so far.
Both are students at CETIS, a private university with three campuses close to the border, one in Tijuana, one in Mexicali, and a third in Ensenada along the coast. After the 2008 financial crisis, administrators at CETIS began noticing an uptick in the number of American students crossing the border into Mexico to get their degrees. Fernando León García is CETIS president.
Historically, we've had on and off families with some links to Mexico. However, as a result of some complications within California in terms of choice, costs, accessibility, it all of a sudden became a popular and increasingly frequent incidence.
In-state tuition for the UC system runs about $14,000 a year. Tuition at Cal State is about half that. But many schools in the Cal State system now require that students live on campus their first year. That can cost about $10,000. Annual tuition at CETIS, which has no housing requirement, is just under $12,000. CETIS became the first university in Mexico to get accreditation by the Western Association of Schools and Colleges in 2012. That's the same accreditation held by the California State University system.
If you have accreditation, then you have a certain level of quality that people look for.
There are currently 337 students at CETIS who graduated from Southern California high schools. That's up from just 50 in 2010. Last year, the university launched a business program exclusively in English, the first of its kind in Baja. The university is located in an area surrounded by maquiladoras, multinational companies with factories along the border.
So collaboration with multinational industry, and therefore employability, all of these are factors that have some impact in terms of the students' decisions to come here.
Both Vasquez and Yanez say they had to deal with some pushback from friends and relatives when they decided to study in Mexico. Vasquez started out at a community college in San Diego before transferring to CETIS for its business program. He says his parents disagreed with this decision.
Their original response was, well, we already live in San Diego. Why don't you study here? You already know the system. You've been here practically for your whole life.
A year in, he doesn't regret studying in Mexico. Both students plan on working in the border region, where they hope their cross-border experience at CETIS will be an advantage. In Tijuana, I'm Max Rivlin-Adler from Marketplace.
We've heard throughout the program today from a couple of different retailers, one whose business is still pretty fresh, one who's been running his for more than 40 years. And we close out our short tour with somebody in the middle, a New England chocolatier in business with her husband for a decade and a half.
My name is Kristen Tallheimer Bingham, and this is Dean Sweets in Portland, Maine. And the time is 2:00 on Monday afternoon, December 16th. Our business is very busy right now. It's kind of, I think of it as the nexus of when everything's happening at once. So we still have corporate orders. We have website orders that are still coming in and people walking into the store. In a couple of days, the corporate orders and the website orders will stop because we're really will be outside of that zone where we can ship things and have them arrive before Christmas. So that'll slow down a little bit, which is actually kind of nice because it's a little bit of a relief. But right now it's really probably the busiest days of the year for us.
That was Kristen Tallheimer Bingham in Portland, Maine. We're going to check back in with her and Patty Delgado and Gary Merriman one last time after New Year's to see how their retail seasons went. This final note on the way out today, the news and then an observation. The House passed a $1.4 trillion spending package today. It'll take the government through the end of the fiscal year next October the 1st, which is great because there won't be a holiday shutdown threat. The Senate's got it now. The president probably, I guess, is going to sign it. But think about this for a second. $1.4 trillion in spending voted on today in a deal that was reached last night. I know this is the way things always go, but really? Okay, we're going. Dow Industrial's up 31 points today, about a 10th percent. The NASDAQ up 9, also a 10th percent. S&P 500 basically flat. Our digital and on-demand team includes Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Brian Ronahan, and Tony Wagner. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.